Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. I hope you had a great weekend. In this podcast, episode 268, I want to talk about lifting weights and heart disease. Now, as a diagnosis, heart disease includes a few main types. There's disease in the vessels of the heart that's called coronary heart disease. That results in things like myocardial infarction or heart attacks or MIs, angina, chest pain, heart failure, and coronary death. There can also be disease in the vessels supplying the brain. That's called cerebrovascular disease. And you've heard of things like stroke and transient ischemic attacks. There can also be disease in arteries outside of the brain and heart. That's called the periphery. And we call that peripheral artery disease, which can produce painful symptoms in the muscles during activity due to lack of blood flow, typically in the calf, also sometimes in the glutes, but can be in other muscles. And this is also called intermittent claudication. And there can be other disease in the entire cardiovascular system. Now, heart disease is the leading cause of death globally, taking an estimated 17.9 million lives each year, about a third of which happen in those under the age of 70. While death rates from heart disease and stroke have declined in the United States since 1975, exercise has been shown to reduce risk of heart disease over and over and over again. So why all this matters is that early last month, the American Heart Association put out a new scientific statement on resistance training in individuals with and without heart disease. Now, the article was published in the journal Circulation, and it served as an update to their previous recommendations, or paper, published in 2007, which itself was an update to their first set of recommendations from the year 2000. Now, I've linked all of those in the show notes below, so you can kind of go through chronologically. Again, that's 2000, 2007, and 2023. I'll be honest, having read all these, I think the 2007 paper is far more instructive for folks who have questions about lifting weights with heart disease than the latest update, because it includes a lot more specifics regarding not only what happens to the heart from lifting weights, which many people may be worried about, but the inclusion of resistance training in exercise programs for those with heart disease or who are at high risk for it. So we'll cover the highlights of the 2007 paper along with updates from the 2023 scientific statement to bring you up to speed. To begin, both papers cover the functional benefits of resistance training that we all know and love, such as improved body composition by way of decreasing body fat and increasing muscle mass, also increasing strength, balance, preventing falls, and so on. The new paper adds data that resistance training improves sleep quality and reduces risk of depression and anxiety as well. Now, from a medical perspective, only the new guidelines go into some detail about things like blood sugar and blood lipid or cholesterol levels. Yes, resistance training reduces average blood sugar levels in those where it's high, so those with type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance, something like that. The new guidelines cite data suggesting there's a 17% reduced risk of developing diabetes in those who lift compared to those who don't. That's great news, and we also have recent data that shows that lifting weights improves blood sugar management in those with diabetes, particularly if the individuals actually get stronger when lifting weights. For instance, this recent meta-analysis showed that those with type 2 diabetes who had the greatest improvements in their 1RM strength tended to see the greatest improvements in their average blood sugar levels. Now, resistance training also reduces low-density lipoprotein, or LDL, levels and triglycerides to a modest degree, while tending to increase high-density lipoprotein, or HDL. The decrease in LDL on average is about 10 to 13 milligrams per deciliter, which is actually greater than the decrease that we saw in the vegan diet study, the twin study we talked about on the last podcast. Now, of course, it matters what your starting cholesterol levels are, what your starting LDL level is in this particular case. The higher it is, the bigger difference you're likely to see. And so those weren't the same between the two studies, but I did find that interesting. Now, this is a big enough drop in both cases to probably help reduce the risk of heart disease, particularly on a population level, though most people will need additional lifestyle and possible medical interventions to optimize their risk, depending on the person. With respect to changes to the heart itself, the new paper does not say anything about how the heart and circulatory system change in response to lifting weights. And I feel like this is an oversight, as this document was written to be widely consumed, presumably, and should, in my opinion, extensively cover some of the heart-related things that might deter doctors and other people reading it from recommending or participating in resistance training. The 2007 paper goes hard, though. For example, the 2007 paper provides ample data showing that resistance training induces physiological, that is, adaptive, changes to the muscular chambers of the heart, specifically the left ventricle. And again, they go out of their way to say that these are not pathological or maladaptive changes. And this is important, as it's been suggested that resistance training causes pathological changes in the left ventricle, causing it to grow thicker. This is called left ventricular hypertrophy, or LVH, which is defined as an increase in the mass of the left ventricle, and can be secondary to an increase in wall thickness, an increase in cavity size, or both. But the presentations can vary depending upon the underlying pathology. Now, the thought is that because resistance training causes blood pressure to go up, especially when lifting heavy, one study found that nearly maxing out on the leg press increased systolic blood pressure from the normal 120 millimeters of mercury or less at rest to over 400 millimeters of mercury. And because of this, the heart would have to have abnormal changes from this kind of stress, leading to heart disease down the road, presumably. So the thought is that resistance training causes hypertrophy of the left ventricle and maybe some of the other chambers of the heart. But doesn't all exercise actually increase hypertrophy of the heart, this so-called athletic heart? And we actually reviewed this in a previous podcast, so I'll give you the Cliff's Notes. So with endurance training, it was proposed that aerobic training caused an increase in both the size of the left ventricle's chamber and also its wall thickness in order to deal with an increased amount of blood being pumped into and out of the heart. Because most of these adaptations were thought to be driven by processes that occurred during the relaxation phase of the heart, that is diastole, and that's when the muscle fibers of the heart lengthen to accommodate being filled with blood. This was called eccentric hypertrophy because eccentric muscle contraction is a contraction that occurs while the muscle is lengthening. In contrast, it was suggested that resistance training caused predominantly an increase in the thickness of the muscle of the left ventricle without a concomitant increase in the size of the chamber. So it's just kind of this isolated left ventricular hypertrophy. And because it was thought to occur while the heart was actively contracting, so the muscle fibers of the heart were actually shortening, that's a concentric contraction, this was dubbed concentric hypertrophy. So instead, the 2007 paper from the American Heart Association points to data showing that the left ventricle, yeah, it does indeed get thicker with resistance training, but the chamber size doesn't get any smaller. And more importantly, these changes do not increase the risk of heart disease or other problems. Recent data that Dr. Baraki and I reviewed in episode 215, the extreme exercise hypothesis, agrees. While eccentric hypertrophy does occur in endurance training, this is the same adaptation seen in resistance training. What's more, the actual thickening of the left ventricle that occurs from endurance training is actually far greater than what we see in resistance training, with the chamber size increasing in a proportional manner. The ratio between the ventricular wall thickness to chamber size is not meaningfully different between endurance and resistance training either. And again, that was episode 215. I'll link that in the description below. But the whole point here is that the changes that we see in aerobic training, which were kind of thought to be, beneficial, those are the same types of adaptations that we see in resistance training. You just get there a different way. Now, unfortunately, the new paper does not talk about this at all, which I feel like is in error. Drive the point home to people reading it that resistance training doesn't cause worsening function or structural changes to the heart. I mean, you guys are the American Heart Association, right? Now, with respect to blood pressure, both papers report that resistance training reduces resting blood pressure. Again, culling some of the concerns around lifting weights, increasing blood pressure, or being problematic for those with elevated or high blood pressure. Now, interestingly, the newest paper undersells, in my opinion, the effects of resistance training on blood pressure, despite citing the correct data. So this data is from NACI in 2019, and it's a meta-analysis of 391 studies, half of them investigating the effect of blood pressure medications on resting blood pressure, and the other half looking at the effects of exercise, all different types, on resting blood pressure. And it found that in those who were exercising, who had a resting blood pressure at baseline greater than 140 millimeters of mercury, again, normal is 120 or less, that endurance exercise on average lowered systolic blood pressure by 8.69 millimeters of mercury, and resistance training lowered systolic blood pressure by 7.83 millimeters of mercury. Combined endurance and resistance training lowered systolic blood pressure by 13.5 millimeters of mercury. But the paper, the newest paper from the American Heart Association that was published in December of 2023, did not report those values. It reported values much, much smaller, which is kind of strange to me, considering that this is the most recent meta-analysis kind of looking at this directly. And so again, I think they kind of undersold that. Now, they do go on to say that lifting can improve endothelial cell function, and the endothelium are the cells lining the blood vessels and the inside of the heart. So that's good. Both papers also suggest that resistance training can improve cardiorespiratory fitness as measured by VO2 max, particularly in those with reduced fitness at baseline. We discussed that as well on our conditioning series, and we agree. But in general, lifting is not enough to produce the amount of cardiorespiratory fitness needed to maximize health, but it's certainly better than nothing. So if you had an individual who couldn't really participate in meaningful conditioning training for some specific reason, resistance training might be a good way to improve their cardiorespiratory fitness otherwise. Okay, here's where things get interesting. We just talked about how resistance training can improve blood sugar management, can improve lipid levels, so your cholesterol levels, and lower resting blood pressure. And these are all risk factors for heart disease, along with things like obesity, for example. But in 2007, the American Heart Association said, and I quote, data that resistance training reduces cardiovascular disease risk are equivocal. So we weren't doing so hot in 2007 because there's a considerable amount of data actually showing this. And the new paper adds some of this data, suggesting that those who do combined aerobic and resistance training have a 40 to 46% lower risk of all-cause and cardiovascular disease mortality. So that's heart disease, mortality, death from heart disease. And further, the new paper goes on to say that lifting may actually provide independent and additive benefits to aerobic training for reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, they could have spent paragraphs talking about this and really hammered the point home, but they didn't, just a few sentences at the end of a paragraph. So I think that's kind of another oversight in the newest paper. And they go on to make an interesting point that people who do not do aerobic training are unlikely to actually do any resistance training. And that may be true. I assume that actually is true outside of this particular podcast listenership or podcast like this. So recent data actually backs this up, and it shows that individuals who are not meeting the aerobic physical activity guidelines are less likely to participate in resistance training than those who are aerobically active. For example, only about 3.6% of adults who report no aerobic activity do resistance training, compared to 43.5% of adults who are aerobically active. Well, they actually do lift weights. Okay, so let's get on to the actual heart disease stuff, the bread and butter of these papers. Again, it's the American Heart Association. It's got to be about heart disease, right? While the 2007 paper reports data showing that resistance training in those with coronary heart disease is well tolerated and improves quality of life, strength, and endurance, they do not specifically make a recommendation that those with heart disease should lift weights. The new paper does not make specific mention of resistance training in those with existing heart disease outside of heart failure. So let's start there. For heart failure, which is the decreased ability of the heart to pump blood throughout the body, this can be caused by a number of different processes, including left ventricle dysfunction, right ventricle dysfunction, valvular heart disease, pericardial disease, obstructions in the heart, and more. There's been a longstanding concern that lifting weights might actually worsen the condition, worsen heart failure. Mechanistically, it was assumed that the relatively large increase in blood pressure during resistance training, remember that leg press blood pressure up over 400 millimeters of mercury, well, that this elevated increase in blood pressure during lifting weights would place the heart under a strain that's too high for those with heart failure. Specifically, that the left ventricle would have a tough time pumping against this elevated blood pressure seen in resistance training, and the heart would become even more dysfunctional. The American Heart Association takes special steps and care to remind folks that adverse remodeling of the heart after resistance training in those with heart failure has not been demonstrated. They go on to say that lifting weights can be incorporated safely into rehabilitation programs for those with heart failure. And the new paper continues to support these recommendations, but otherwise doesn't say much.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, with respect to the risk of having like an adverse cardiac event, like a heart attack or something like that during resistance training, the old 2007 paper states that lifting weights has a favorable balance in the ratio of oxygen supply and demand in the heart muscle compared to aerobic exercise, presumably suggesting that resistance training is relatively safe for the heart in general, including those who may have sort of compromised heart function, but who might otherwise get recommended aerobic training to the exclusion of resistance training. Now, the new paper adds that signs or symptoms of heart issues like chest pain, arrhythmias, and so on are less common with resistance training compared to aerobic exercise, stating that, and I quote, resistance training has a lower rate of cardiovascular complications compared with aerobic training. Now, this was a meta-analysis of a bunch of studies looking at those with risk for heart disease or those who actually had active heart disease and were undergoing exercise training or testing. They found that there were 63 non-fatal cardiac complications that occurred during aerobic training and testing, whereas only one occurred during resistance training. And I think this nugget should have been highlighted. Now, there are issues with the data. We don't have time to go through them all here, but I still think this should have been highlighted as it likely goes against the grain for what most people consider is safe for the heart. When you think about it, people who have heart disease, for example, or who are at risk for heart disease, they assume, or at least many assume, that cardio type exercise is much, much safer than resistance training, or that resistance training is uniquely dangerous. And I think this should have been bolded, underscored, big font, something like that, to really just point out that, in fact, even from a mechanistic standpoint, that resistance training is likely to be safe. Now, with respect to cardiac rehabilitation specifically, these are outpatient programs that provide supervised exercise training designed to speed recovery from acute recent cardiovascular events, so things like heart attacks, stent placement, heart transplantation, or hospitalization for heart failure. The American Heart Association provides evidence showing that resistance training is safe in this setting, as patients did not report more chest pain, EKG changes, or complications compared to those who did the rest of the cardiac rehab program but did not lift weights. However, they make no specific recommendations for intensity, volume, or when people should be cleared to lift weights during rehab or otherwise after a cardiac event in either the old or the new paper. Now, currently, there's a general recommendation to use about 30 to 40% of the one rep max for upper body exercises and 40 to 50% of the one rep max for lower body exercises in the cardiac rehab setting, and to do 12 to 15 reps per set, perform 2 to 3 times per week. Apparently, there's no volume prescription for sets, only reps and frequency. Now, this is all a made-up recommendation, though I do think it's a reasonable place to start. Now, the American Heart Association acknowledges that the conventional guidelines impose a restrictive weight limit of lifting less than 5 pounds for the first 3 to 12 weeks after a cardiac event like a heart attack. But they go on to say that for those who are low to moderate risk and who are supervised, and who have their heart rate and blood pressure monitored during lifting, they can lift more. They can accelerate their return to previous activity levels. The new paper does not add any information to this, nor do they specifically state that those who were previously inactive or previously not lifting weights could undergo the same type of monitoring and, you know, return to lifting weights faster. Interestingly, there's actually a group out of Texas that has done more resistance training in their cardiac rehab programs for quite a while, even publishing a case report on cardiac rehab done over the internet, so like remote coaching, in a powerlifter who had a quadruple bypass. Briefly, the patient was a 55-year-old man who had worsening chest pain, and he turned up to an emergency department in Tennessee, and he was found to have significant blockages and disease in the main arteries supplying the heart. He had a quadruple bypass and began his cardiac rehab 3 weeks later. Now, at 11 weeks post-op, he was cleared to lift more than 10 pounds, and he started to do safety bar squats, overhead presses, and glute ham raises to simulate the traditional squat, bench, and deadlift of a powerlifting meet. At 26 weeks, he returned to his previous exercise training, and he actually competed again 44 weeks after his bypass surgery, where he won his class. I thought that was a pretty cool study, and hopefully that group out of Texas, I believe they're at Baylor, pumps out some more information on this, because I really think that could shake up the cardiac rehab world, maybe barbell medicine, cardiac rehab edition or something like that. Okay, now on to medical screening prior to initiating resistance training. The American Heart Association recommends that folks with diabetes who have a 10-year risk of a coronary event greater than 10% should be screened prior to participation. Of note, you guys should be aware that the use of the 10-year risk is actually falling out of favor, because the approach to treating heart disease and risk factors thereof is oriented at reducing the risk of having heart disease-related complications over a lifetime, not just in the next 10 years, obviously. And so it looks like we're going to start adopting or shifting to this 30-year risk tool, which was actually just released last week, and I've linked that in the description below. Now, both papers go on to say that medical testing is not recommended prior to resistance training, provided that the training is initiated at a low to moderate level. They do recommend consulting a physician prior to starting lifting weights in those with uncontrolled high blood pressure, major risk factors for heart disease, those with implanted pacemakers or defibrillators, and those with a history of heart attack or stroke. Despite creating, you know, this barrier to exercise, I do think those are reasonable. And if you're a health or fitness professional, you probably want to be aware of the Physical Activity Readiness Medical Examination, or PARMED-X, which is an assessment tool that can be used by the healthcare professional to help determine whether or not someone should be cleared to lift weights or otherwise exercise. That's pretty important in those who maybe aren't familiar with the current guidelines, current recommendations, or exercise in general. So I've linked that in the show notes below. Interestingly, though, the American Heart Association also recommends that those with diabetes at any age or those with musculoskeletal limitations be evaluated by a physician prior to lifting weights. Now, I think these are less reasonable and create an unnecessary barrier to entry for participating in resistance training, provided we're talking about diabetes that's reasonably well controlled and the musculoskeletal limitations didn't just show up recently or are progressive. In short, I'm not really sure what a medical evaluation adds in either of these cases, but the new paper basically repeats these recommendations anyway. As far as resistance training recommendations for those with heart disease, but who are not in a cardiac rehab program, the 2007 paper's recommendations are somewhat similar to the current exercise guidelines, recommending 8 to 10 exercises that include all of the major muscle groups of the body, being performed for 10 to 15 reps for a single set, and less than 40% of the one rep max 2 days per week. To their credit, the American Heart Association in both the 2007 and the recent paper include specific exercises, the chest press, pull downs, leg press, triceps extension, and biceps curls, to name a few. Can't leave out the arms. They also include a rep weight chart that correlates the repetitions possible with percent of one rep max, presumably so that folks don't get their 1RM tested prior to starting exercise. You can imagine somebody turning up to the gym and being like, hey, I am at high risk for heart disease. And then the fitness professional's like, we had to test your 1RM just to make sure we're not lifting too heavy. Be a bad day potentially. Now for this rep weight chart, they say that 17 reps are probably the maximum amount of reps possible at 60% of a 1RM. 12 reps is probably the max that you could do at 70% of a 1RM. And to me, that both of those things seem pretty accurate. Where it starts to go a little sideways is they say you could do 8 reps max at 80% of your 1RM and 5 reps at 90%. That seems less likely, but that's probably mostly in a trained individual or somebody who's not at high risk for heart disease and just starting exercise. So close enough for government work. They also give a nice account of the double progression progressive overload model, recommending that people increase the reps per set until they can max out the rep range, and then they can increase the weight. They even include a discussion of RPE. All of that is pretty cool. Now, on the other hand, there are a few weird recommendations. First one being alternate between upper and lower body work to allow for adequate rest between exercises. I'm not sure if they mean superset or to just alternate them with rest in between each set. They don't really make that clear, nor do they give any sort of program. They do claim that the entire resistance training session can be done in 15 to 20 minutes, so maybe they do mean superset. Although I don't know that 15 to 20 minutes of lifting weights is enough to sort of optimize the risk from a heart disease standpoint or other sort of conditions that can arise from insufficient physical activity. It's certainly better than nothing, don't get me wrong, but 15 to 20 minutes, I don't know if that's like their, hey, if we tell them it only takes 20 minutes, maybe we'll get him in the gym. I don't know that I have a huge problem with that. It's just kind of weird that that's the dose that they recommend. All right, so that's the first weird recommendation. The second weird recommendation is that they recommend to avoid doing the Valsalva maneuver. Now, you knew this was coming, you know, holding your breath, bracing during exercise. You knew the American Heart Association was probably going to say, hey, don't do that. But then when it comes to actually citing data showing that doing a Valsalva is worse than not, of course, there's no citations there. They don't even discuss it. And further, avoiding a Valsalva maneuver isn't really possible during any sort of challenging effort. And the American Heart Association says, hey, you should inhale during the relaxation phase, as they call it. Presumably, that's the way down, the eccentric. And to exhale during the exertion phase, presumably the concentric or the way up. Again, as it turns out, people will hold their breath whether you cue them to or not if the effort is hard or challenging enough. The third and maybe weirdest recommendation they have here is that people should do resistance training after they perform aerobic exercise. And this is interesting because that's actually one of the few times where some sort of interference effect has been shown. The interference effect being impaired strength gains from doing both strength and endurance training together. Now, recent meta-analyses show little to no evidence of long-term interference effect in most studies, unless aerobic exercise is performed before the resistance training. When I say long-term interference, I'm just talking about strength gained over the course of 12 weeks, 16 weeks, 24 weeks, you know, longer-term studies, not just what happens in a single session. I don't really care what happens in a single session. I care more about are strength gains actually really, you know, diminished or attenuated over a long period of time. Sure, adding a bunch of additional training stress via conditioning to a lifting program can result in a training load that a person cannot currently handle, and that could temporarily reduce their performance until they get used to it, if it is something that they can adapt to in the first place. If you just added a bunch of marathons that you're going to run each week alongside your resistance training, well, I don't know that you could adapt to that ever, but if it's an intelligent, progressively loaded conditioning program, that seems more feasible. Long-term, though, the effect on actual training outcomes for concurrent training, that is combining both strength training and conditioning together, the long-term outcomes are really good. The recent 2022 meta-analysis of 43 studies concluding that concurrent aerobic and strength training does not compromise muscle hypertrophy and maximal strength development. However, explosive strength gains may be attenuated, especially when aerobic and strength training are performed in the same session, when aerobic is done before the strength training. These results appear to be independent of the type of aerobic training, the frequency of combined training, training status, and age. So I just thought it was pretty weird that they actually recommended that people do the resistance training after the aerobic exercise. That might make sense in a cardiac rehab program, although again, I'm still not sure why they would have folks do that unless it was just like, hey, we think that the most important thing for you to do in cardiac rehab is to do aerobic training. If you only have, you know, X amount of time, do that first and then everything else is bonus. They would then have to show data that that actually is a superior outcome. Why not prioritize resistance training? But that's another argument, and I know that data for that doesn't exist yet, but we can hope for that in the future. Now, finally, with respect to exercise prescription, they recommend that those with heart disease do not use an overly tight grip to prevent an excessive blood pressure response, citing the American College of Sports Medicine, that's the ACSM's exercise prescription book, which does not discuss this directly. We know that isometric challenges like a hand grip test do tend to increase blood pressure. But blood pressure is going to go up as a function of muscle mass involved, exercise intensity, and overall effort level anyway. Effectively, any type of activity increases blood pressure. Presumably, though, the American Heart Association thinks that holding on too tightly will increase the risk of having additional cardiac issues by increasing the blood pressure too much. Though I think not only is this recommendation difficult to implement, I don't know that that's the case either. And so it seems weird that they just kind of included this additional recommendation other than a CYA, which you can figure out what that acronym means. All right, so that's the gist on both papers. But here's my gripe. Here's my main criticism. The new paper doesn't really address specific exercise prescription in cardiac patients, which I thought was weird. You know, why not comment further on protocols for lifting after heart attack, you know, during and after cardiac rehab? Or how about the inclusion of resistance training for stroke rehab to improve function and reduce further risk? What about resistance training in valvular disorders, training with various medications used to treat heart disease? Or return to training after myocarditis, or really anything that's right in the wheelhouse of the American Heart Association. I mean, at the bare minimum, they could have gone harder on how participating in resistance training reduces risk of heart disease or complications thereof, or spent more time hammering how important it is in addition to cardio, which many may assume is enough. Now, in talking with my colleague, Dr. Baraki, he brought up a good point that the American Heart Association is not going to just publish hot takes on various conditions where data does not exist. And I guess that's fair, but I think not discussing them and instead spending a lot of time and text on programming, which is not very good. Don't get me wrong, it's better than nothing, but it just seems like a missed opportunity to me. If you go to American Heart Association publication on resistance training, you're really just looking for the green light or contraindications to participating in resistance training And specifically talking about conditions that people may develop over the course of their life, well, I think that's important, especially if we know that resistance training can improve function. That, and we, you know, there's really no argument there. But further spending some time on whether or not resistance training can reduce the risk of developing these conditions and how to properly implement these things, even if it's just a consensus statement or expert guideline, that would be very helpful for a lot of health and fitness professionals. At the end of the day, I just want more people to know that lifting weights is not only safe for the vast majority of people with respect to their heart, but it's also beneficial for their ticker too. All right, that's it for this episode of the Barbell Medicine Podcast. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend and leave us a 5-star review. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.